Good morning. I'll be presenting our paper titled Dynamic Resource Allocation for Database Servers Running on Virtual Storage. And this is joint work with Daniel, Syed, Adrian, Jin, and my advisor, Christian Amza. We're all from University of Toronto. So we're looking at multi-tier resource allocation, and we look at this because many large-scale services are composed of several tiers. For example, the typical three-tier architecture consists of the web server tier, the application server tier, and then the database server tier. And on this architecture, we run many applications, and these applications share resources in each tier. But if you have uncontrolled sharing, this can lead to interference. And in this case, application A is using a lot of the resources at the database server, and this hurts the performance of application B. So our focus is on the storage hierarchy. In particular, we look at the database and storage, and we look at this because disk is a big bottleneck for database applications. And in particular, we look at how to partition the database buffer pool, the storage cache, and the disk bandwidth. And we want to use all of these resources efficiently. But previous work has studied how to allocate resources in isolation. For example, the MRC paper presented in ASP+04 looked at how to partition memory between applications, and there have been several works in previous FAST conferences which have looked at how to partition the disk bandwidth. But we want to use the entire storage hierarchy efficiently, but there are some complications. For example, the performance of an application depends on how much resource it gets in each tier. And in addition, there's also interdependency between the resources. For example, if I increase the buffer pool that I give to an application, this may reduce the number of storage accesses that it does. And as a motivating example, we run two synthetic workloads, which we run using the Oracle I/O tool. And we run two versions of this. So one is a small workload, which is cache-friendly, and it has one outstanding I/O. And the second one is a large workload, which is cache-unfriendly, and it issues 10 outstanding I/Os. And we connect both of these directly to our storage server, where they're sharing the storage cache and also the disk bandwidth. And you can see what happens when we share resources here. Because a large workload dominates over the small workload, this leads to a huge slowdown for the small workload. And if we partition the cache, we benefit the cache-friendly workload, which is the small. And if we partition the disk, we avoid disk interference, and this benefits both as well. But the best performance you get is only when you look at how to partition both the cache and the disk, and this is where we get the best performance. So we make two contributions. The first contribution is that we build performance models dynamically, and these performance models account for interdependencies between resources. And our approach is lightweight, but is still able to generate very accurate models. The second contribution that we make is we design a multi-level resource allocator that uses these performance models to guide resource allocation. In addition, we can correct model errors using runtime sampling. Finally, we use global utility to partition all these resources. And in particular, we try to minimize the sum of application latencies. So again, our approach has two parts. First, we build performance models, and we build one of these per application. And basically, a performance model is just a function that predicts what the application latency would be given a certain amount of the buffer pool, certain amount of the storage cache, and a certain fraction of the disk bandwidth. Next, once we have the models for each application, we try to find the best resource partitioning setting. And in this case, we're trying to find some partitioning setting such that we minimize the sum of the application latencies. And we try to find the best setting using hill climbing. So the outline for the rest of my talk is as follows. First, I'll talk about online performance models, what they are, and why they're really hard to build. Next, I'll present our multi-level resource allocator and its prototype implementation. Then I'll present experimental results and conclude my talk. To begin with, we start by looking at a single-level cache model. And what we would do is we're basically plotting the application latency that we would see for different cache sizes. And in this case, let's assume that we can allocate the cache in 32 megabyte chunks. And if we have a gigabyte of memory that we're allocating in 32 megabyte chunks, we have 32 possible settings that we can give to an application. And what you can do is we can go in, try out each of these configurations. For example, we can give an application 32 megs of cache and measure its performance. And because this is a very small cache, we see very high latencies. Similarly, we can try out the application with a gigabyte of cache, and in this case, we have very small latencies. And once we have all these samples, we can interpolate among them, and then we get a single cache model. Now, using this model, suppose our goal was to get performance, which is latency, underneath the dashed line. In this case, we would allocate 512 megs to this application. So this is the sampling way of doing things. But you can also do it analytically through simulation. And this is basically what the MRC algorithm does. So what the MRC algorithm does is, given an I/O trace, it simulates many cache configurations, and it computes the miss ratio, which is how many of the accesses go to disk or miss in the cache and go to disk, and it computes the miss ratio for different cache sizes. And basically, we can take this line and multiply it by the I/O latency to get the average latency that the application would see. With a two-level cache model, the situation becomes more complicated because the performance is not only affected by the storage cache, it's also affected by the database buffer pool size. And this is because by changing the database buffer pool size, we change the I/O trace that comes into the storage server. And so the performance model needs to consider both of these parameters, which is M times N choices. So again, let's assume that we have gigabyte caches that we're allocating in 32 megabyte chunks in both places. With a single-level cache, we had to look at 32 possible settings. And with a two-level cache, we have to look at M times N, which is 1,024 different settings. And just to make it easier, I'm going to show it in a graphical format. Basically, two levels of caches, the model looks like a 3D surface, where the two axes are buffer pool size and storage cache size, and we're predicting the average latency that the application would get. And to generate this surface, we need 1,024 data points. And as a comparison, I also overlap the single-level cache model. And in this case, it's just a line on this surface, and we only need 32 data points. So in our system, we have three resources. And so our model gets even more complicated because the performance that we would see is determined by three numbers, which is the size of the buffer pool that we give to an application, the size of the storage cache, and also the fraction of the disk bandwidth. And you can see immediately we need a lot more samples. So we already had 32 times 32 for the two caches. Suppose now we can allocate the disk bandwidth in 10 different settings. We have over 10,000 samples. And to measure each of these settings, it takes a long time because to fully see the benefit of a cache, we need to let the cache warm up such that all the data is in the cache. And in our system, this takes up to 15 minutes per sample. And so to gather 10,000 samples, it would take us over 3 months. So next, I'll talk about our multi-level resource allocator and how we can build performance models really fast and how we can allocate resources using these models. To build our models really fast, we use two key observations. The first observation is that we know the cache replacement policy. And we can make this this assumption because we observe that most cache replacement algorithms are LRU. So even though we have two levels of caches, they're only as effective as the largest cache. And this is because of cache inclusiveness. The second key observation that we make is that the disk is a closed-loop system where the rate of responses is the same as the rate of requests, and so the performance is proportional to the disk bandwidth fraction that we give. And so first I'll talk about how we can make the cache model. And here what I show is an application using two levels of cache. The buffer pool has a capacity of 2 blocks, and it's using the LRU replacement policy. Storage cache has a capacity of 5 blocks, and it's again using an LRU replacement policy. Basically, now the application is going to run through these trays, and it needs to fetch these blocks from disk. So first, it needs to fetch block 8. Because both of the caches are empty, this data comes from disk, so it did one I/O, and this data is cached at the storage cache and also at the database buffer pool. And now if we run through the trace, we see the following contents in both of these caches. And what you see is that the buffer pool contains blocks 4 and 3, so the storage cache contains blocks 4, 3, 6, 5, and 8. And you can clearly see that the buffer pool or the storage cache includes the data that's already in the buffer pool. In a similar setting, if we have a bigger buffer pool and a smaller storage cache, again, you see now the buffer pool contains data that's already contained in the storage cache. And this is cache inclusiveness. So what we say is because we do have cache inclusiveness when we have LRU replacement policies in both places, we can model the two levels of caches with an approximated single-level cache. And this single-level cache has a size which is equal to the bigger of the two. The expression is slightly cut off, but basically what we're saying is you would get the performance that's equal to the max of rho C and rho S. And indeed, if you run this trace on this single level of cache, you see the same number of IOs. So we get the exact same performance. For if you had exclusive caching, for example, through a coordinated cache replacement algorithm, such as using demotes, then the model is slightly different because you do have exclusive caching where the data that's in the buffer pool is not cached in the storage cache. What you see is a performance that's equal to a single cache that's equal to the size of combining both. And basically now what we have is we have models for each of these applications. In this case, I've shown model for application one and another model for application two. Once we have the models for each of these applications, we can combine them and then we try to find the best resource allocation setting. And again, we try to find a setting that minimizes the sum of application latencies. So up to this point, I've been focusing on the cache because it's easier to show it as a picture, but we also add a disk model. And to build a disk model, we use the observation that the disk itself is a closed-loop system, and so the performance is proportional to the disk bandwidth fraction. And to make this disk model, what we do is we measure the base disk latency, which is what is the disk latency if we give 100% of the disk to the application? And we predict the latency for other smaller bandwidth fractions using the formula that I show here. And so now that I've talked about the cache model and the disk model, we can start to put it together. So basically, first I'll talk about how we're combining the cache models and how this makes modeling very easy. So here I show an application using a buffer pool and a storage cache. And basically, the number of IOs you would see in this case is the number of misses that you have in the buffer pool that also miss in the storage cache. And so just to point out the details, the number of misses you would have in the buffer pool is determined by the buffer pool size, and the number of misses you would have in the storage cache is determined by the buffer pool size and also the storage cache size. And in this case, we can easily compute MC using the MRC approach that was described earlier, but MS is the harder one to compute. But using an approximated single-level cache, what we see is this expression is almost equivalent to the right-hand side. And the right-hand side is, again, computed using the MRC approach. So now, if you exchange the terms, we can compute MS just by using the MRC model. So once we have the simplified cache model, we can now combine them and add latencies to all of these. And in the first case, we have some latency if we hit in the buffer pool, and this is determined by LC. You can have a latency if you now miss in that buffer pool and go to the storage cache. And in this case, the latency is pretty much dominated by the network latency. And finally, we have the disk latency where we miss in both of these levels of caches and we have to go to disk. So the model is all good, but due to some implementation choices, we do have some inaccuracies in the model. For example, in the cache model, typically, people don't implement LRU. They implement something that approximates LRU. For example, they use the clock replacement policy. In addition, we also have inaccuracies when the workload consists of a large fraction of writes. In terms of the disk model, we're using a quantum-based scheduler that was described in FAST07. And with this scheduler, what we see is we see interference due to disk seeks at very small disk quantas. But the good thing is that all of these inaccuracies are localized in known regions. For example, for the disk model, it's localized at very small disk quantas. So because we do have some inaccuracies in our model, what we do is we do runtime refinement, and we do an iterative approach for this. Basically, what we do is we use cross-validation to measure the model quality, and we selectively sample where we notice that the error is high. And what we do is now we can combine the computed measurements, which is through our model, and the measured samples, and we can interpolate among them using regression. In particular, we use support vector machine regression to combine both of these samples. We do all of this inside our virtual storage prototype that has basically two parts, the client side and the server side. The client side runs MySQL with its own buffer pool. The only change we made in the MySQL buffer pool is that we support resizing and partitioning of the buffer pool. And when MySQL misses in the buffer pool, it goes through the Linux block layer, through NBD, which is built into Linux, and it connects to our storage server. And at our storage server, we have three different modules. The first part is the NBD module, which basically understands the packets that's sent by the client side. And these requests go into, and you first check whether it hits in the storage cache or not. And if it does miss, then we go into the quantum-based scheduler and eventually to disk. And we evaluate our approach using three benchmarks. The first benchmark is a uniform that we call uniform, which is a micro benchmark. And we use two other industry standard benchmarks, TPCW and TPCC. And we run all of this on the standard LAMP architecture. Also want to focus on the cache configuration. In particular, we use a MySQL buffer pool of 1 gig and a storage cache of 1 gig. And we use the InnoDB cache replacement that's already in MySQL, and we use clock replacement policy inside the storage cache. We compare our algorithms, which we call global and global plus. The global, in the global algorithm, what we do is we gather the trace at the buffer pool, and we measure the base disk latency, and we compute the performance of other configurations using our model. The second algorithm is global plus, where we first run global, and we get an approximated model for all the resources, and we can evaluate the model accuracy at runtime. And we iteratively refine this model using runtime samples. So our two algorithms are global and global plus. We compare our algorithms with four other algorithms. The first algorithm that we compare against is MRC, where we partition the caches independently using mixed ratio curves. The second algorithm is disk, which ignores how to partition the cache. It basically partitions the caches equally by giving equal partitions to all the applications, but it tries to determine the best disk quantus to give. The third algorithm is MRC plus disk, where we basically run MRC first, then we try to find the best disk quanta, and we compare all of this with what we call an ideal star, which is an algorithm that builds a model using measured samples. And in this case, we use over 1,000 different sample configurations, and we build a model using SVM. So next, I'll present our results. And this is basically the roadmap of our results. So first, I'll talk about our multi-level cache allocator and how the optimal settings are different for different replacement policies. In particular, I'll show what is the optimal setting for use when you have LRU replacement policy in both places, and also when you have demote cache replacement policies. Next, I'll talk about our multi-level cache and disk allocators. And finally, we'll look at the accuracy of our computer models. So before I begin, I want to show the mixed ratio curves of all the benchmarks that we use. And here, what we are showing is the mixed ratio for different cache sizes, in particular, different buffer pool sizes. And as you can see, the uniform workload is very cache intensive, and you get very low mixed ratios only when you allocate a lot of the cache. And on the other hand, TPCW and TPCC are less cache intensive. So first, we'll look at, well, how would you partition two levels of caches? And first, I'm going to show with the LRU replacement policies in both of these caches. And here, what we are doing is we're running two identical TPCW instances, and I'm showing results on a heat map where the lighter areas show good configurations, and then the darker areas show bad configurations. And on the x-axis, I showed the storage cache size for one instance of TPCW. And on the y-axis, I show how much buffer pool we're allocating, again, for that same instance or one instance of TPCW. And you can see that when you have LRU replacement policies in both of these caches, the ideal partitioning setting is not 50-50. So that would be the green area in the middle. But the optimal settings are if you either give a lot of the buffer pool and none of the storage cache to one, or you do the other way where you give a lot of the storage cache and very little of the buffer pool. The situation is slightly different when we have a demote replacement policy. And in this case, you see that the optimal setting is actually 512, 512. And this is because when you're using demotes, you have exclusive caching. So next, I'll talk about how we can partition both the cache and the disk. And here, I'll talk about using two identical applications and also by using two different applications. So the first configuration that we try is when we run two identical instances of the uniform workload. Again, this you can see that the MRC disk and MRC plus disk algorithms, what they do is they basically partition the cache as 50-50, which means that they lose the benefit of the storage cache. And this is why all of these three algorithms, they have very poor performance. But by using our model, we can notice that you do have cache inclusiveness, and so it's not good to allocate caches 50-50. And in fact, using our global algorithm, we match performance that's equal to the ideal. So next, we run a configuration where we run TPCW and uniform together. Again, if you look at single resource allocators such as MRC disk and MRC plus disk, they perform poorly. In particular, I want to point out the disk algorithm because this one didn't consider misratio curves. It allocated caches 50-50. And this really hurts the performance of the uniform workload because it was more cache intensive. And because of that, the uniform workload has very high latencies. And on the other hand, I want to focus on the global algorithm. Again, by using our models, we can account for all these interdependencies, and we get performance equal to the ideal algorithm. Finally, I want to show a situation where we run the TPCW and running concurrently with the TPCC workload. And in this case, again, MRC disk and MRC plus disk, they perform poorly. The global does better than them, but the global model can itself be improved by runtime samples. And we have to do this because TPCC has a large fraction of writes, and this creates inaccuracy in our model, and which we correct using runtime. And once we correct, again, we get performance equal to the ideal. So finally, we can look at the accuracy of our computer models. And here we'll look at the accuracy of our cache model and our disk model. So here, again, what I'm showing is a heat map. And the heat map is showing, so wherever you see color is the areas where we have error. And on the x-axis, I show the buffer pool size that we're giving to TPCW. And on the y-axis, I show the storage cache size that we're giving to TPCW. Again, what I want to point out is all the cache errors are localized when the two cache sizes are equal. And the reason for this is because when the two cache sizes are equal, the inclusiveness observation that we make doesn't hold as much. And this is because no one cache dominates over the other. And so the inclusiveness is weakened in the middle area. Similarly, again, for the disk model, you can see that the measured, which is the solid line, and then the computer, which is our predictor using our models, you can see that our predictions are very accurate for larger disk quota sizes. And you can see that the errors that we have is for very small disk quanta. And this is because of disk seeks that happen when we have very small disk quantas. So to conclude, the problem is that we need to consider resources on multiple tiers to determine how to allocate resources correctly. And independent cache or disk allocators aren't sufficient. And so what we do is we propose a dynamic allocation of both the cache hierarchy and the disk, and we do this by building performance models dynamically, which we iteratively refine at runtime. And once we have these models, we use these models to do global resource partitioning. And by using our approach, we get performance up to 2.9 times better than single resource allocators. So that's the end of my talk. Thank you. And at this point, I can take questions.
Hong Tang from Yahoo. Mm-hmm. Maybe I missed something. So you need a global knowledge of the workloads. Say, for example, if the SQL Server database is on different places, and you could have client machines connected to the same server from different client machines. How would you have this global knowledge from the client side and the server side coordinate?
Could you repeat the question because I didn't understand how you were distributing the SQL Server?
Say you run one benchmark on one from one client machine to the to one database server, and
yes.
You run another benchmark on another client machine to access the same database server.
Yes.
I suppose you need to know the performance characteristics by different configurations from both client and server, right?
Well, we are focused on the storage part of the system, right, which is from the database itself and also the storage server underneath. So even if you run two different clients from two different machines, what we're looking at is from the database point of view and below. So I don't know how the situation changes with your example.
Okay, so you're saying that you only look at the central server part?
Yes.
Okay.
We do have current work which is looking at including the client part and like expanding all to all the tiers. Because in the end, we do want end-to-end performance. But we're starting with the storage, and then we're slowly building up.
All right, thank you.
Bill Belosky from Microsoft Research. My question is about writes. If you have writes and you have dirty data in the caches, it's going to mess up your cache model because you can't LRU evict dirty data. And so my question is, what do you have to do to your models to be able to deal with write-heavy loads, in particular if you have two things running, one of which is write-heavy and the other one's not? It seems like it's going to...
So just handling the writes for one particular workload, we do have some complications with that. And we're still looking for a very concise correction to do to our existing model, mm-hmm. but we don't have that concise correction yet. At this point, the only way we can correct it is by using runtime samples.
Okay.
The second part of your question is, what if one of them is write-heavy, the other one is read-heavy? They're actually two independent applications, and then the way we partition the buffer pool is to give two independent buffer pools to each application. Mm-hmm. And so they would not interfere with each other. So the one that has heavy writes, we would have to correct it, but for the one that is more reads, we don't have to do anything for that.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
So I'm wondering about the static partitioning of the resources, and could you run into temporary situations where you have some sort of non-work conserving behavior on the disk or underutilization of cache resources?
Yes. So when we are partitioning resources, what we do is we allocate a certain partition to an application. And maybe at transient times when it's not using it, we don't correct for that. And basically, our goal was to get predictable performance. And if we do any of these optimizations where we take away the space that's not being used and give it to another application, then we cannot get predictable performance. So to build our models, we need predictable performance, and that's the only way we can allocate resources. Of course, it would be nice to use these resources that's not being currently used, but then the modeling becomes much more complicated.
Right. Let's thank our speaker once again.